Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the 107 Live Show. I am your host. I'm your host, AJ Jones. We're having a little technical difficulties, but we're going to get the show on the road. Tonight we're talking about a subject that has been kind of in the headlines and in the backstory of the political stage of this country almost for the last almost 3 years. About 2 years ago, Colin Kaepernick, he was former quarterback for the San Francisco 49ers, led them to a Super Bowl, had a pretty decent career. He basically would of the injustice that was going on and decided to protest by kneeling, taking a knee. But overall subject of today's show is athletes with voices, the protest of Black athletes in America. Colin Kaepernick is not the first to protest using his platform in sports. And we oftentimes hear that, politics have no place in war. But behind the scenes, politics kind of drives sports. Perfect example. Of the 32 owners in the NFL, 28 of them paid campaign contributions to the president, number 45. And people say that sports and politics don't go together. Well, over the last, I would say since late 2011, early 2012, hate crimes in this country had gone up like ridiculously high. And so Colin Kaepernick is one of those people who had always been kind of aware of that stuff. And one day in the 2016, he wanted to do something in his own way using his own platform. He wanted to use his sport. So what did he do? He actually reached out and contacted a former NFL player and retired Green Beret, Nate Boyer. Colin initially told him he was just going to sit down during the anthem. You know, he actually did that. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, nobody was really paying attention. So the next time, he contacted Nate Boyer. Nate told him to take, you know, there's a better way and respectable way to protest. And he thought sitting down was kind of, it looked blatantly disrespectful and it would draw a lot of attention. So what Nate Boyer told him was to take a knee, because taking a knee is basically a gesture of respect to all those who had passed on during war in combat, who were part of the military uniform. So he took that and used it as advantage. And it basically, Colin was saying, you know, me taking this knee is my homage and my sign of respect for all of those young Africans or people of color who have died at the hands of police, you know. And the NFL went bananas. The NFL went totally berserk. They went totally bananas. Now, Colin Kaepernick is just the biggest protest in sports as of late. But he's not the first. Now, the first memorable one that comes to mind is the protest to the Vietnam War by the people's champion himself, Muhammad Ali. Now, Muhammad Ali was good friends with Malcolm X. He traveled the world with Malcolm X. They went to Egypt together. They were in Zambia together a couple of times. You know, Ali was just a very, very, very cultured person. He paid attention. He looked around and paid attention to people. You know what I'm saying? And he paid attention to what was on TV. Like, he was one of those people that didn't watch TV, but when he was looking at something, he paid attention to it. And he would see clips of people from Vietnam. He knew what they looked like. He knew what was being shown, what the country looked like. You know what I'm saying? He'd hear stories about the culture of people who had been over there and had come back. So, you know, Muhammad Ali was quoted being very, very controversial with his statements saying, and I quote, "Ain't no Viet Cong ever called me no nigga." Well, he's right. But because of the country being the way that it was at the time, they saw that as the champion being so disrespectful. This is the people's champion, the world champion. He's American champion. He shouldn't be talking like this about his country. I mean, I'm just going to be honest. He's telling the truth. I mean, You want this out in the forefront to always be honest and truthful. Hey, there it is. So, short time later, he finds out that people literally, like literally, somebody submitted his name and he was to get drafted or whatever. And in the process of all this, he went up there and he was like, you know what? I know how I'm going to do this. I am not going to step forward. I'm not going to allow myself to be drafted. I'm protesting this war. This war is not my war. And with him being of the Islamic faith, you know what I'm saying? This particular, you know, war is pretty much, you know, against his religious belief. He didn't want to fight it. Now, in 1967, he was stripped of his titles for refusing the draft. He was convicted of a draft dodge. They was going to call him a draft dodge. But one of our presidents, number 43, a.k.a. the Bush, he dodged the draft, but nobody's calling him a draft dodger because his parents had money. Now, Ali's case would be continuously talked about for 3 years, and it rose through the rank of the courts all the way to the Supreme Court. In June of 1978, his conviction was overturned on the basis that it went against his religious beliefs. And that was a huge, huge, huge win. The military was kind of reconfigured. They kind of did away with the draft a few years later. All right. Now, Ali was in country and was vilified because he didn't want to fight in the war. Vilified. This is a man who served his country in more than one way. He represented his country in the 1960 Rome, Italy, coming home with a gold medal in heavyweight boxing. You know, you pretty much, anytime you have USA on you anywhere in a capacity where you're outside the country, representing your country, doing what you do for the most part, whether it be a sport or in military or even as a politician, you know what I'm saying? You know, that's a service. But people didn't look at it like that. Now, shortly after that was the 1960. Now, during the same time Ali's case was being appealed several times in court, the 1968 Olympics in Mexico City happened. And the stance that shook the world up on the podium after the 200-meter dash was run, Mr. John Carlos and Tommy Smith, who won gold and bronze respectfully, stood on top of the podium. And the first thing they did, they took their shoes off, they unzipped their jackets, and they had on black T-shirts under their jackets. And then it was almost like you really couldn't see the USA on the front of their jackets. Part of that, they were defying the Olympic etiquette at the time. And they wore, and I read a Time magazine article about this. John Carlos said, and I quote, "We wore beads around our neck to protest the lynchings that had taken place. We had taken to represent the poverty by black and white people in the country. The raising of the fist represented a protest for black power, and it also was an homage to all the black soldiers who were fighting and dying in Vietnam." This just like, and then in John Carlos's book, The John Carlos Story, he said, and I quote, "The scariest thing in the world is to hear 50,000 people go silent. And it was so silent you could hear a frog piss on cotton." Not my words. Those are his words from his actual book, The John Carlos Story. And he said it was almost like being in the eye of a hurricane. And he's like, it was just so quiet in the stadium. It was eerie. You know, these two black men taking a stand in front of the world. And the people in the higher-ups in the Olympics, the IOC, they were so appalled that they made them leave the stadium immediately. And they came back home very, very quickly. When they got home, they were vilified. Because they went through so much. And one thing about protest, it's never comfortable. And the crazy part about it, the people that are most uncomfortable with these type of protests are usually people who are watching the protester protest. Now, true enough, the people who are protesting know what's in stake before they even get into what they're protesting. They weren't surprised. But it was the people who were watching them that were more surprised than anything. I mean, everything we're talking about on the show right now, we're basically talking about the biggest protests in sports, you know, today. Now, there's been some smaller ones, but there were some big ones. Now, this very next protest that I'm going to mention, now I'm going to come back to Colin Kaepernick, but this very next protest I'm going to talk about almost goes unmentioned for almost, it, you know, it wasn't talked about again. This protest that I'm about to talk about happened in 1995. A guard by the name of Chris Jackson, who would later change his name to Mahmoud Abdul Rauf due to his conversion to Islam shortly after he's drafted in 1993. He was an All-American guard at LSU who was a teammate of Shaquille O'Neal in college. This man was probably one of the best guards in the league at the time. One of the best guards. A lot of them, his shooting form, a lot of them compare him to Steph Curry as a shooter. Now, he was like he was a true point guard like Curry, but he was a shooter slash scorer, but you know what I'm saying? He was a lot of one could say he was Steph Curry before Steph Curry. But moving, Chris Jackson's protest came due to the fact that because he was Muslim, he saw a lot. Now, most people don't know that Chris Jackson, a.k.a. Mahmoud Abdul Rauf, was from Gulfport, Mississippi. He's from the Deep South. So upon him converting to Islam, he learned some things about this country that really didn't rub, that really didn't sit with him well. So the actual anthem was just not good. And it was just something that bugged the NBA by not standing for the national anthem. He was suspended, for one game and was fined $31,000 for not standing for the national anthem. And it got to the point where he had to come up with a compromise. And in his compromise, he literally came up with a compromise with the NBA. He was like, you know what? I'll stand for the anthem, but I'm going while the anthem is playing. And so that happened. And at the end of that season, the Denver Nuggets traded him to Sacramento. And while in Sacramento, his playing time went down, eventually lost a starting position. And shortly after that, his contract ran out and he wasn't in the NBA. It was almost pretty much exactly like what Colin Kaepernick went through. You know, he was pretty much blackballed at this point. So he went and played overseas until about 2001. He came back with the Grizzlies. Shortly before they moved with the Vancouver Grizzlies, shortly before they moved to Memphis. Then after that one season with the Grizzlies, he had played in Turkey, played in China, played everywhere overseas. And everywhere overseas. And he played everywhere overseas and retired from basketball for good in 2011. And so he had 11 and a half seasons in the NBA and the rest was overseas. So he did all right. You know, it didn't stop him from playing the game that he loved. Now, Mahmoud Abdul Rauf's protest was kind of like a precursor for precursor to Colin Kaepernick for this reason. Most people don't know Colin is a recent convert to Islam. He converted to Islam in 2014, 2015. And in his conversion to Islam, he would take trips to Africa. he would take trips. He's been a little bit of everywhere, you know, since his conversion to Islam. And his conversion to Islam helped reach into himself deeper, not just as a black athlete, but as a black person. He didn't see himself as a quote-unquote athlete. He saw himself as a regular person who just happened to play a sport. And he used his platform, and his sport, once he realized his sport was his platform, then he decided in the fall of 2016. All right? He took that stand and took that knee. And once he actually did it, and folks were asking, why did you do it? Why are you disrespecting the flag? Why are you disrespecting troops? He came out and told them, hey, me taking a knee is not disrespecting the troops. Me taking a knee is not disrespecting the flag. I am protesting the injustices against people of color by the hands of the police. Point blank, period. And he put it out there. He put it out there. Now, the crazy part about athletes using their voice in sports as far as on subjects like this, two of the four biggest professional sports in this country are over 70% African-American driven. And people say politics and sports don't go together. Well, like I stated earlier, behind the scenes, politics drives sports. Owners support politicians. And these politics that the politics that these owners are supporting by huge financial contributions, owners don't understand. These owners and the front office people in these different professional leagues, they don't understand that the policies that they're supporting and the people that they're supporting directly affect the athletes that work for them. These owners do not see that. And the other side of this, the patrons who buy tickets to these sports or watch them on TV or who become fans, those people also don't understand that, and they don't understand that the politics all these people support directly affects the people that are on the field or on the court playing these respected sports. This is why the athletes' voices are so important. Now, in the United States, professional athletes are the top 1.5 to 2% of their sport. They're the best in the world in their sport. They have a in their sport because the sport instantly makes them a celebrity. Like, because you're in the league, you're a celebrity. That's is just how it is. Whether you make $168,000 or you make $168 million a year, you have a platform. You're a level of celebrity might be, you know, if you make a certain amount, you know, your level of celebrity might not be that high, but you're so in the story. But people really don't understand the magnitude and how serious this thing is. I listened, like, I was in the military. I was in the military. I was actually getting ready to get out of the military right when the 2016 season happened. The 2016 season happened when he protested and everything. And I remember being in the office, I was coaching high school football. We were in the office one day, and they asked my opinion on Colin Kaepernick. You know, you used to be in the Army. What do you think about this? Do you think he's just? I was like, no, I don't think he's disrespecting the flag. I mean, he came out and said it's not about the flag, it's not about the military, it's not about the troops. It's about he's protesting injustices done to people of color. And these protests are very necessary. We live in a divided climate that is spearheaded by the leader of our own country, Mr. 45 himself. I'm never going to say his name. Never, ever going to say his name. He's 45. But the protest of black athletes in America is very, very necessary. Now more than ever, LeBron James, the word nigger spray painted on the garage of his house. He's a black man. He's probably he's the best player in the world right now. And he's not exempt from it. And he spoke out and said, and number 45 has come, for some crazy reason, number 45 is poking his nose in athletics of all things, something he knows nothing about, let alone, you know, he's sticking his nose in basketball and football and saying stuff. This man called the whole NFL SOBs. For the most part. What happened the next day? Everybody in the league took a knee. He didn't like that at all. No, he didn't. Mm-mm, no. Not a happy camper. Well, the protests in this country the athletes have a voice that most regular people do not have. You're talking about the top 2% in their sport. Let's look at this. There are close to 500 million people in the U.S., but there are roughly about 300 to 400 basketball players. Come on now. Somebody got to use their platform. Somebody got to speak up for the larger population. Now, I'm just going to say this. There's going to be a part two to this show. It's not going to be the next show, but a part two is coming, so be prepared for that. Well, the next show will be next Wednesday, this exact same time. I am your host, AJ Jones, and this is the 10-7 Live Show. Next week, just call in. All right. Peace.